Ticket City presents Why You Go to the Game to see Georgia Southern.
The play is known simply as the run. Peterson took a handoff up the middle, broke a tackle at the line of scrimmage, spins away from the next defender he meets, and he shakes off a diving tackler. 30 yards down the field, he meets another defender and literally throws him out of the way with his right arm, grabs him by the shoulder pad, and swipes him off onto the sideline. It was really so surreal because the place is going completely berserk during the run until he throws off that defender. He throws off that defender, the whole place went silent, stone silent, like an intake of breath. It was just so amazing. Nobody had ever seen it before. And then, of course, the place exploded again after they all caught their breath.
Put yourself in the action with Ticket City. Visit SavannahNow.com/sports and click on tickets.
Oh, he will. Adrian Peterson is taking care of things right now.
Down the sideline. If he can get loose, he's gone. Iligwe will score.
The Wesley Fields. Touchdown, Georgia Southern.
All right, Georgia Southern fans, welcome to another episode of Georgia Southern Extra. I'm Travis Jadon, the beat writer for the Savannah Morning News for Georgia Southern Athletics. Joined, as always, by Greg Talbot of WSAV. Greg, how are you this week?
Doing pretty good. High school football season is heading into the playoffs, so I have my life back again, and that's really exciting.
All right, well, yeah, so it's exciting, and it was not exciting this weekend in Monroe, Louisiana. You like that segue, Greg?
Let's get the first one out of the way. Woof.
Yeah, so you got plenty of stuff to talk about from a 44-25 loss by Georgia Southern at Louisiana Monroe. We'll try not to harp on it for too long, and we'll get to a Troy preview. We'll also have some sound bites from Chad Lunsford and quarterback Shire Words from Monday's press conference, kind of addressing the ULM game and where they go from here with three games left in the regular season. We'll jump into our four downs. I'll start first with first down and just say that all is not lost after this win or after the ULM loss. Georgia Southern still has control of its own destiny, and really the Troy game is within the conference just as big as it was before in terms of what a win against Troy would mean. And simply put, it means the inside track to winning the Sun Belt East Division, and it means more or less clinching the Sun Belt East hosting the championship game. That's pretty much already decided with the West leader having two losses. But, yeah, plenty on the line against Troy, against a really good football team. So as bad as the loss felt on Saturday and Sunday probably, and even for some Eagle fans probably still right now it hurts, there's still plenty to play for. And the important thing is that they control their own destiny, not having to worry about other teams just yet.
Yeah, and just for the selfishness of my own fun with our ESPN Plus broadcasts, I had been praying that they were going to win this game against ULM, just for the case of the narrative that would have been leading into the Troy game. Two teams undefeated in conference. The winner of this game essentially wins the Sun Belt East. At least if Southern had won, they would basically win the Sun Belt East because they would have beaten Troy. They would have beaten App State, and unless they had collapsed against Coastal and Georgia State, they would have won the Eastern Division. That said, no, you are right. No. All is not lost. Southern has a chance to control their own destiny. Can they do it? Certainly helps that they're playing this game in Paulson Stadium. If they're playing at Troy, I would handicap this game at maybe minus five for Troy. But this is, I mean, Travis, is the line out for this game?
Yeah, so the line opened at, I think it was Georgia Southern -2.
And that sounds right.
And then quickly it moved all the way to Troy being favored by a point. And last time I looked on Tuesday morning-ish, it was a pick'em. So
people hammered Troy right away, and now it's back to even.
Yeah, I mean, I think more or less you get 2 points from college, typically just for being at home. So right. It's more or less a pick'em game, which I think is pretty spot on.
Okay, yeah, no, so yeah, but to respond to you, you are absolutely right. It was a pretty bad performance. It does not cost them too badly in the overall picture. It's just a shame that it happened in this particular week leading into Troy, because I was so hoping for the ultimate undefeated versus undefeated for the Eastern Division championship narrative for the Troy game. My second down is that the fans have a right to be upset about this game. And it's funny. I enjoy watching your Twitter mentions in the little Twitter spats that you get in, actually.
I'm glad somebody does.
It's one of my favorite little things to watch on Twitter in the days following a Georgia Southern win or a loss for a game. And there are two camps of people. There are people who, you know, who understand this loss in context, which is they don't think it's a harbinger of things to come. They think this is just a one-off, juiceless performance in front of 2,000 people halfway across the country, coming down emotionally off the App State game. And then there are some people who seem to think that this game means absolutely nothing. I don't think anybody is out here saying it's the end of the world.
Yeah.
But there are people who see it as a loss in context, and in my mind, a loss that makes sense. And then there are a group of fans out there who seem to be pretty defensive about the fact that it was anything resembling something that deserves criticism. So in my mind, this is a game that deserves some criticism. I don't know exactly where it lies. I talk to coaches and players, and I can't exactly get a good read on it, and credit to them for not giving the media the read on that. But, yeah, I can say my mind right now is that you don't need to freak out, but it's a loss that makes sense in context. And if you can internalize the reasons and the context, if you're the coaches and players, you can recover pretty easily down the home stretch here.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. I think that there's specific things you can point to in the ULM game that would be, you know, valid to say this is why, you know, this is where it went wrong, this is why we lost, this is why we gave up this many yards here, this is why this happened, instead of things that aren't tangible, things that you can't measure.
Yeah, right.
And so there's plenty there. We'll jump into that in a little bit. I'll do my third down and say that sometimes, Greg, football is simple. Either you block, you tackle, throw, and catch, or you don't. And sometimes it's, you know, one guy versus another guy, and the other team wins those battles more often than not. On Saturday against ULM, I thought it was clear that ULM had, you know, not better players at certain positions, but they outplayed Georgia Southern in certain parts of the game.
It didn't even look like they had a more complete, it wasn't a game plan thing. It was just a players out there on the field between the goal lines thing.
Yeah, and honestly, the tackling as a whole for Georgia Southern was awful. And, you know, I don't have the numbers for missed tackles or how many yards they had after contact, but if you rewatch that game, and I have, there's plenty of places you can point to say this hasn't happened all year, and it happened on Saturday. So I think that's where fans and especially people like us, Greg, we can use Saturday as kind of a comparer to what's happened before Saturday and say, you know, this guy hasn't been doing this and he did this on Saturday. And there's enough of those on that film, on that ULM film, to say, you know, it's not surprising that Georgia Southern ended up losing 44-25. Yeah. But yeah, so football sometimes is more simple than we make it, and sometimes the other team just beats you. And I think, you know, that's what happened on Saturday.
Yeah, my fourth down is my takeaways from Monday's press conference, the 3 o'clock weekly presser that Chad does with the media with a couple of players. Now, a couple weeks ago, that App State press conference, those kids could barely contain how excited they were to go out and kick some butt. That they were fired up for 3 or 4 days before they got on the field. Chad was full of piss and vinegar. Can I say that? He was full of fire and brimstone. And so are the players. And those kids were ready to run out on the field, and they were ready to dominate. And even though they were the underdogs, they felt like they could go toe-to-toe down to the final drive on the fourth quarter, win, and rush the field. Monday's press conference had a different feel to me. Now, part of that is naturally, it's their first loss since Clemson. It is the first game this year they've played that they've lost that they weren't supposed to lose. Mm-hmm. So there was a natural letdown feeling in that press conference. But my vibe was of a team that was still kind of, it was kind of like they got punched in the first round of a boxing match, and they're still kind of like shaken up, looking around, stunned. Mm. They're going to be ready to play on Saturday. I don't doubt that, but seeing the unshakable confidence and the desire to get out there and hit somebody on the field, this is the first press conference on Monday leading into a game where that hasn't seemed so evident to me. Now, I'm not saying they don't have it. Chad is going to get his kids up for this game. But I'm going to be interested to see how aggressive and how much fire they come out and play the first quarter with on Saturday, with Monday's press conference kind of in the back of my mind.
Yeah, I mean, and the press conference looked, you know, not ecstatic for obvious reasons, but it is refreshing at least to see when they're super excited after a win, they show it. And when they're disappointed and they know that they've had a tough loss, they show it. So that is refreshing to see and rare.
I think it is. And one thing that I will never stop being grateful to Chad Lunsford for is his transparency.
Yeah.
And his honesty in answering our questions. Not going to name names. There are plenty of media members, local and national, who when they talk to members of Georgia Southern, they don't ask them questions. They just want the easy soundbite. I try to get real answers out of Chad, and he tends to give real, honest, thoughtful, self-understanding answers.
Yeah.
When you ask him a real, genuine question. And it was so nice throughout the season, but especially on Monday, to hear him talk about how where he and his staff came up short, where the players came up short, what they need to evaluate, and in his thought process after the game. And if you go to George Southern Facebook page for the athletics or football, you can watch his press conference and see what we're talking about.
Yeah.
But I am always so gracious to Chad for allowing us and then by extension the fan base into the program in that way. 90% of college football coaches don't do that. So hats off to Chad for allowing us all inside the process a little bit, because it is so rare and everybody thanks him for it.
And Greg, to that end, on Monday, you asked Chad Lunsford if he thought that the chatter and the hype, whatever you want to call it, going in or coming out of the App State game and then coming out of last Sunday's AP votes in the AP poll for Week 10, you asked him if he thought that had anything to do with the loss. And I thought that his answer was really telling, and like we said, super honest.
Yeah, it was thoughtful and it was reflective. And is that the one you're going to play for the folks now?
Yeah, we're going to play it in a second, unless you want to recap it for him.
Well, yeah, just headed in. I want to say that I had already asked Kendall Vildor and Shai Wirtz this question. And Chad, the players just kind of brushed it off because, you know, that's the tendency is when you have a question that might reveal something wrong about process, you tend to brush it off as a player. It's nothing wrong with them.
Yeah,
just
fair.
Just what happens when you ask athletes questions, part of the job. But again, you're going to hear Chad be reflective here, and this is part of the reason that I love covering him. Take a listen.
I really don't feel that way. I don't feel like it was the noise. I don't. You know, I'm sure some of our guys, I know they heard it, but we address that, and that's things that we do as coaches. We're not going to sit there and act like that it's not there. We addressed it early on. We talked about how this would be a tough football game and that we had to bring our best game. I think after watching it, you know, I don't think we had the juice that we needed. I think we came out flat. I think we did some things that were very uncharacteristic of what we've been this year. Pre-snap penalties by our offense, and you know, and then you know, a couple snaps that kept us from getting our plays started. We didn't really get done what we needed to get done. And when you watch that football game, there was a time, you know, we missed the first opportunity with the field goal, and you know, we just didn't rally. There were a couple other times in the game where we got a pick six, went for two, got it within 16. You know, we should have more juice level there to know that, hey, we're still in this ball game. Didn't do that. Later on, we got a block punt, scored a touchdown, got us within 16. Still no juice, you know. So ultimately, that lies on me. I got to make sure our team's ready to go. I got to make sure that that they understand that we're never out of it. Even though we got punched in the mouth and we didn't respond, we were not out of it. And we got to learn from this, and we will.
So that's Lunsford talking about what he thinks is the main reason for the loss in the game. You'll hear more from him in a little bit, and also from quarterback Shai Wirtz. But so for Lunsford, it wasn't the things that you can't measure. Like I've talked about before, Greg, it was specific things on the field. He thought they didn't have enough juice coming into that game. You know, I don't know how you measure juice, but in any sense of the word, Georgia Southern didn't have it on Saturday, and it showed. So let's jump in real quick to just some takeaways from ULM. I know a lot of people don't want to continue harping on it, and they want to move on to Troy, and we'll do that. But, you know, I think it's important to understand what went wrong on Saturday in order to kind of be prepared in case it happens again. And a lot of the things that happened on Saturday just were weird freak occurrences. And I'll give you three examples quickly of that. On Saturday, Georgia Southern was 0 for 1 in the red zone, and ULM was 5 for 5. Coming into the game, Georgia Southern was number one in the Sun Belt in red zone scoring. ULM was dead last. So that's one thing that's just out of the norm and kind of a weird occurrence that happened. I mean, you can point to reasons why, but that just hasn't happened for either team all year.
Honest to God, that's the reason that I'm, the further away we get from this loss, I really think it's kind of an anomaly game. Yeah. I don't think it's going to be a trend thing. I think it's just going to be something at the end of the season, they look back and say, well, God, was that a weird game?
Yeah, I agree. I agree. And I mean, I was the same way, right? Like during the game, you know, it was like, well, what has gone wrong here? And then after you watch it and you're kind of more removed from it, it becomes easier to see that maybe this game was the outlier. Next thing that's that was just kind of unusual for a Georgia Southern football team was first down plays offensively. Georgia Southern's been really good on first down plays, and we've touched on that on this podcast before, and I've written about it on SavannahNow.com. So Georgia Southern on Saturday ran 25 first down plays for 105 yards. ULM ran 31 for 337 total yards. So 337 yards on first down.
Out of the, what, 500 and change?
Yeah. So,
gosh.
And I believe that Caleb Evans threw for exactly 337 yards in total. So first downs obviously killed Georgia Southern. ULM picking up more than twice the amount of yards as Georgia Southern on only six more first down snaps. So, and then finally, there's a second half possession percentage that I kind of like to look at. It shows that you're able to control games when you're winning and kind of put games away. Coming into Saturday, Georgia Southern was eighth in the country controlling the ball for nearly 60% of the time in second halves this year. ULM, conversely, came in at 41%, ranked 127th in the country in second half possession. Well, on Saturday, ULM out possessed Georgia Southern in the second half by 5 full minutes, 17.5 to 12.5, basically. Georgia Southern scored in all three phases of the game, lost for the first time since 2008, I believe. And it's only the seventh loss for Georgia Southern since joining the FBS when it wins the turnover battle. So a lot of things that don't typically happen happen in this ULM game. And, you know, before we touch on maybe a specific part of that ULM game, Greg, you saw kind of what I saw, that a lot of these things that haven't typically happened happen, and it kind of, I'll say, is it let Georgia Southern let those things kind of snowball and avalanche, and that's something that Lunsford talked about that they haven't been doing all year. They've been resetting, as they like to say, but they didn't do that on Saturday, and it cost them. And before I jump into, I guess, the play of Shy Wirtz, quarterback, which I thought was, you know, by far his worst game of the season on Saturday. Greg, did you see anything that you thought was a specific reason on the field on Saturday for ULM basically dominating?
I mean, I haven't gone back and watched any film. I usually watch the last Southern game on Wednesday or Thursday, mm-hmm. So I'll probably watch it tonight, getting ready for the ESPN Plus broadcast. But the thing that struck me more than any particular player or scheme, Travis, was that for the first time this year, I would even include the Clemson game, Southern didn't know how to fight back. They would score a touchdown, ULM would respond with a touchdown, and Southern would go three and out. Not putting blame anywhere, but I would say, yeah, my big takeaway was I was watching that game, and I was following it on Twitter at Savannah Tap House when I wasn't in front of the TV, and it seemed like Southern just didn't have an answer. And they even had an answer for the first half against Clemson.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So that's why I think it's an anomaly. A Chad Lunsford team always has an answer. They always have juice. They always have fire. They always have a response. I think they'll have a response for the rest of the year if they're ever behind in these games. But yeah, my big takeaway was part of the reason this didn't seem like the Southern team we know wasn't because they weren't scoring or because of their attitude. They just didn't have a response.
Yeah, and then let's jump in quickly before we move on to Troy. Greg, I've been kind of vocal about this on Twitter. As you've seen, it's, you know, it wasn't a popular opinion, like many of my opinions.
You're not a true fan.
Yeah, on Twitter. Shai Wirtz on Monday was asked, I think it was Mike Anthony of the Statesboro Herald that asked him, you know, if as the leader of the offense and really as the leader of the team and the quarterback, if Shai Wirtz, if he took any blame or responsibility or if he felt any guilt for the performance on Saturday by the offense as a whole. So when he was asked that, he had this answer for Mike Anthony.
I put this one. As far as the offense goes, on me, I got to do a better job of getting us going. I got to make plays for us, especially on third down. I got to convert, and that's just on me. I got to do a better job of that, and that's something that going into this week, I'm going to really kind of hone in and make sure I do a better job of.
So Wirtz, yeah, takes blame for the offense struggling, and that's, you know, not surprising from Shai. He's obviously developed a bunch of leadership skills, and we heard that coming into the season, and it's been evident all year long.
It's a quarterback's job.
Yeah, it's his job, but I mean, he's not wrong either. When you look at the game, probably the biggest outlier is that one of the best rushers in the conference, one of the best athletes in the conference, had 3 rushing yards on Saturday. If you don't look at that number and then try to go back and find out why, you're doing yourself a disservice, because that is extreme. I mean,
what did he end with? 10 yards net?
I think he had 3 yards rushing.
I thought it was 10 yards. Well, either way, it isn't the 150 yeah, we're used to seeing.
It was less than a yard average per attempt. Gosh. On only 12 attempts. But, you know, going back and looking at it, there were some decisions out of the option that I thought, you know, Wirtz hasn't made those decision mistakes all season long. And so I was curious to know why he would just now against ULM, you know, was it something ULM did, or was it something that Wirtz saw, or was it just a bad game? Of course, Wirtz has been excellent all year, and he is, you know, probably the MVP of this team. We said last week going into the ULM game, he accounted for 43% of their touchdowns. So if he's that valuable and we know that, it's only fair that the we look at his performances and judge them accordingly. And as Shai goes, so goes the Georgia Southern offense. And when he didn't go on Saturday, the Georgia Southern offense didn't go. So, I'd have plenty of faith in Wirtz that'll bounce back. But, you know, go back and look at that game. There were plays that Shai Wirtz missed that he doesn't usually miss. And he took 5 sacks. He doesn't usually take 5 sacks. He's either escaping the pocket or he's throwing the ball. Twice on third down, he was sacked. And when you go back and look at it, you know, there's an opportunity for a throw at least on those specific plays, especially a 3rd and 5 early in the fourth quarter. So for me, Wirtz is a really, really good quarterback, and he's perfectly built for this team. But he played bad on Saturday, and I think we can all acknowledge that. He acknowledged it. He took the blame, and he took the responsibility.
It's the mature thing to do, and it's the right thing mm-hmm. for a college-age quarterback to do. So I was really proud of the way he handled himself in the press conference on Saturday. Chad is the one who can be reflective and honest as a head coach. I think if you're Chad, I think you probably had Shai do the right thing, which is take responsibility, but also stay in the zone, and, you know, we're on to Troy.
Yeah.
So I was proud of the way Shai handled himself in the press conference. I think it's an anomaly, man.
Yeah.
I really do. Just the whole, this ULM game, I don't think any evidence points to the idea that this is anything other than a one-off come-down game.
Thank you for listening. This podcast is brought to you by The Big Calendar at DoSavannah.com. For all your arts and entertainment needs, and to get a bird's-eye view of everything going on in the city, check out DoSavannah.com and SavannahNow.com.
Let's go ahead and jump into Troy, unless you got anything else for y'all.
No, I'm ready to talk about Troy. This is a wildly intriguing matchup to me.
Yeah, I mean, it's fascinating. If you look at Troy, and I encourage anyone that's subscribed to ESPN Plus to take a look at their last game against Louisiana and tell me that it doesn't look like the most versatile offense that Georgia Southern will have seen all year. This offense can do a little bit of everything.
Which is really funny because that's my takeaway too, but I keep thinking back to what everyone was talking about in August and everyone's saying, Troy's got the best front seven, this is a defensive team. And I've been watching their tape going, what? I mean, sure, they've got a great front seven, but this offense is unbelievable.
Yeah, I mean, they'll go under center, they'll go from shotgun, they'll do some option stuff like Georgia Southern does. I mean, their RPOs, the read pass options, just created havoc for the Louisiana linebackers. And Greg, that's kind of what I wanted to start at. On Saturday against ULM, I thought that the Georgia Southern linebackers were just ultra stressed the whole game. Every play was kind of them not being able to go full steam ahead. And Scott Sloan, the defensive coordinator, has said over and over again he wants his guys playing fast, doesn't want them thinking. And on Saturday, it looked like against ULM, that's what the Georgia Southern linebackers were doing, and they got beat a couple of times because of it. I think on Saturday against Troy, a lot of the responsibility for the game and especially the defense is going to fall on these linebackers, namely Tamarcio Reese and Chris Harris, possibly Rashad Bird, who returned last week. A lot of the responsibility is going to be on those guys to make the right decisions and to tackle soundly against Troy, because they have plenty of weapons and they'll attack the middle of the field better than anybody.
Yeah, what's so funny is, again, just as a brief preface, I think you and I were doing our season preview episode. We're like, yeah, Troy's got a great offense, but their defensive front seven is the best in the Sun Belt Conference. Like,
yeah.
I don't know if that's true. Maybe it is.
They've changed with new quarterback Sawyer Smith. I mean,
well, so here's the background on what this offense has done. We always talk about how this year Troy is an air it out team, and they do like to air it out. Look at their stats. Anyone else notice that they have the leading rusher in the Sun Belt Conference in BJ Smith?
Yeah, he's a good player.
He's a really good player. Sawyer Smith was not the starting quarterback at the beginning of the year. Caleb Barker went down, tore a knee ligament a little more than a month ago. Sawyer Smith was not exemplary in his first couple of starts. Last week against Lafayette, oh boy, 18 for 22 and 300 yards and a touchdown. That guy came to play, and he just is now coming off his best performance as a starting quarterback in Division I, and he is going to be red hot after that performance for this game. They also have, and this is all off the top of my head, I don't have it written down, Damien Willis, who, crap, I think is statistically also the leading receiver in the Sun Belt Conference.
Yeah, 80 yards a game.
Yeah, and not only is he coming off, not only is Sawyer Smith, the quarterback, coming off a great game, Damien Willis had 10 catches for over 200 yards and a touchdown last week.
Yeah.
It was 12 yards shy of the Troy record for receiving yards in a game set back in the 1960s. So these guys are red hot. Their offense is ready to freaking ride. And the Georgia Southern defense, after their worst performance of the year, getting torched for over 300 yards in the air, they need to have the game of the year. You probably don't need to have the game of the year against Coastal Carolina. You probably don't need to have the game of the year against Georgia State.
Yeah.
If Georgia Southern's defense is going to show up and show out 100% for one game, it has got to be Saturday, or else it's not going to be close.
Yeah, Troy, they look the part, don't they, on offense? I mean, they look extremely talented, and the numbers have been there to back it up, having a leading rusher in the conference and a leading receiver in the conference with a backup quarterback at the helm.
Well, and a quarterback who went 18 for 22 against a good Lafayette team back on Saturday. Like, that's nothing to shake a stick at.
Yeah, he is a big quarterback, a thick quarterback.
He's like 6'3", 2-something.
But he can move a little bit, too, and he'll keep off that run-pass option a lot of the time. So another aspect that the Georgia Southern linebackers and safeties will have to consider. One note, Greg, defensively for Georgia Southern, it does seem like Sean Freeman's going to be back this week. And I think that over the last three games, which Sean has missed, we've kind of seen his impact is a little more than maybe what we thought it was. Several times against ULM, Kendrick Duncan was beat either from miscommunication with the cornerbacks or just outright beat. I mean, having Freeman back there, you can move Darrell Baker and Kendrick Duncan around behind Josh Moon and Sean Freeman, but having Sean Freeman back would be huge, especially for this game when there's just so many decisions to make defensively. But so We touched on the versatility of Troy offensively against Georgia Southern's defense. But defensively, Greg, it looks like, once again, it's going to be kind of a wide defense, for lack of a better word. They'll play a lot of cornerbacks. They'll play a lot of secondary players and linebackers. And we'll go, for the most part, three down linemen.
That's something that doesn't worry me, because B.J. Smith's a great running back, but I also have a lot of faith in the Georgia Southern defensive line, and when they choose to blitz the linebackers, they're able to stop the run. So this game isn't nearly so much to me about stopping B.J. Smith. It's about limiting their four big wide receivers who all have more than 20 catches.
Oh, I'm with you. I'm with you, Georgia Southern defensively. But I mean, I'm talking about when Georgia Southern has the ball, that Troy is going to be...
Got it.
I mean, you've seen them defensively. They'll run, you know, a nickel. They'll run cornerbacks and safeties out there on first and second down. You know, they don't wait for third and long to do that. And then they'll blitz from all over the field. So to me, it looks like the kind of game that you're going to really lean on Wes Fields, especially early. You're going to lean on the interior running game throughout the game. And then you're going to trust Shywards to make good decisions with a lot of defenders coming from a lot of different places. And you're going to hope that Georgia Southern, and this is something they haven't done really all season long, but this might be the game where Georgia Southern decides, at least every now and then, to go with a little bit of tempo to at least get to the line of scrimmage and then adjust the play. I don't mean tempo, you know, snapping it every 5 seconds. I mean a little bit of tempo to get to the line before there's 5 seconds left on the play clock, so you can see what Troy has and what they're offering, and maybe adjust, because it looks like Troy's going to come with as many different packages as Georgia Southern has seen defensively all year.
No, for sure. And can I ask you a question about what you think about a particular X factor I'm wondering about? It's been 4 weeks in a row now that Wesley Kennedy has been listed as a true running back and no longer as a slot back or a slot receiver. He still is technically the leading receiver on the team just because of what he did in the first 5 weeks. Mm-hmm. It's not a waste, but does it seem like he's not able to do so much just out of the backfield versus what he was doing earlier?
Yeah, I've talked about that a lot this week with a few people. You know, I don't know the reasons behind it.
Well, and to be transparent, I will ask, because we haven't done a Georgia Southern game on ESPN Plus in a couple of weeks. Tomorrow when I talk to Bob DeBest, I'll ask him on and off the record, and I'll have some kind of answer.
Yeah, you know, ask him why, because here's my thing with West King. If it was because they wanted to get Bargnair on the field more often, and he had 3 receptions on Saturday. Bargnair looks the part. He looks really good, and I'm all for getting him on the field. But since Wes Kennedy has moved to running back, has he impacted the game more or less than he had previously?
I'd say their ability to stretch the field outside of passing deep twice to Darian Anderson is much more limited.
Yeah, it's definitely much more limited. I think anyone that's watched Georgia Southern this year sees that. So, you know, that might be the product of moving Kennedy to running back, and there might be an advantage somewhere else that Georgia Southern's willing to say, okay, that's
the
fine.
The field just feels smaller, and it seems like an easier package of offense to defend if he's in the backfield.
And there's a certain way to go about running the ball as a running back instead of as a slot, and that's pretty obvious, I guess, but especially in this Georgia Southern offense.
I'm just craving to see him on play action, wide open on a wheel route, 70 yards downfield, or if you're going to start him in the backfield.
Or one-on-one instead of against a 7-man, 8-man box. Yeah. You know,
I'm not saying it's wrong. I just don't get it.
Yeah, I just don't understand it. It doesn't seem like the juice is worth the squeeze there. I mean, you were certainly going along fine before you did it. So, you know, I don't know if that's permanent, but that's something to keep an eye on going forward. Another weird thing, Greg, and we don't need to spend a lot of time on this, but maybe you have an answer that I don't. Curtis Rainey, the senior center for Georgia Southern, has not started the last 2 games, but he's played over 50 games in both. And instead, Drake Grawl played at center for the, you know, first handful of snaps in each of the last 2 games. I don't know.
I have no answer.
I don't know why. That is so strange to me that your senior lineman would not start these last 2 games. And I asked Chad Lunsford about it on the teleconference on Monday morning, and he said that there was no specific reason for it, that, you know, they were just doing that just to do it. I don't buy that, but it hasn't impacted anything. But that's just something I wanted to throw out there. I just don't understand why you would do that, especially to one of your best players on either side of the ball. Touching on Georgia Southern's offense against Troy's defense, Greg, do you think that this is going to be a game where Georgia Southern rushes, you know, 55, 60 times and kind of leans on that throughout? Or is it another kind of game where, I mean, Wirtz threw for 15 attempts last week against ULM. That's a lot. Obviously, they were losing, and that's why. But to me, this Troy game seems like a game that you got to really establish the up-the-middle run and the dive, and that sounds boring and yawn. But, you know, this is a game you have to attack Troy north and south and not east and west.
No, I think you're right. And that's one of the reasons I secretly wish we would even just see Kennedy go downfield for a couple plays in this game. Because, I mean, really think about it. In the last couple weeks, what has been the stretching field play? Just play action to Darian Anderson. Mm-hmm. That's it. And it's been the same play twice, right?
Yeah, and they had it against ULM too, and really the ball was underthrown. Anderson ended up getting a personal.
It's basically the same play. Basically the same play twice for him.
Yep.
So I think you could really be helped a lot by stretching north-south, and I hope they're able to do it. Again, when I talk to Bob DeBest tomorrow for our ESPN Plus broadcast meeting, I'm going to find out, and I'll probably text you off the record and let you know. But I'm going to be really interested to watch the first quarter, because I know DeBest is going to establish the dives, option. Yeah. He always starts pretty slow and steady and establishes over the course of the first quarter, first half, the groundwork. And then in the second half, brings out the weird stuff. I'm wondering if he brings out the weird stuff a little bit earlier if they're down a touchdown. We'll see. Because this isn't a game. Here's the thing. They might say that they're not thinking about the Sun Belt Championship this week in this game. Everyone's thinking about the Sun Belt Championship this week in this game.
Yeah, if you're not thinking about that, you probably should.
Everyone's
start.
Doing it. This game is vastly more important than Coastal Carolina. It is vastly more important than Georgia State. If you're the coaches, I think you need to treat it as such.
Yeah, I think they will. I mean, they know what's at stake here. And everything we know about this team and this staff says that they're going to own it for what it is before the game and then after the game for what eventually will take place. Greg, one more thing before we wrap up here. There was a depth chart change besides Sean Freeman being listed back at strong safety. At cornerback, we saw Justin Birdsong, the freshman who we've talked about a bunch on this show, Greg, play very sparingly on Saturday against ULM. And when he played, that was his fourth game as a true freshman. So now his eligibility is used up for redshirting. So now Birdsong can't redshirt this year, and he's really played sparingly. At cornerback this week, we see Jaden Moreland listed, a true freshman who we've yet to see this season appear on the depth chart. And that kind of is strange, because right behind Moreland is Jesse Liptrot, who I thought played really well on Saturday and outplayed Darrell Baker at the cornerback position, at the third cornerback position. So to put a face we haven't seen on the depth chart in a position group that just struggled mightily tells me a lot. I don't understand why you use Birdsong sparingly and then waste that fourth game for redshirting, but that's something, you know, that we can ask Lunsford and company later on.
I want to get your prediction of this game before we go. What are you thinking?
You're going to put me...
Weird sound in my throat there. So okay. Let me put in my broadcast voice. Travis, what are you thinking for Saturday, buddy?
Well, I'm nervous, to be honest with you, Greg. I don't think... I don't know that Georgia Southern matches up too well against Troy.
I've been saying that since summer, by the way.
Yeah, I don't want to be a Debbie Downer and pretend like everything's bad, because it's not. But, you know, I have to go by all I can go by is what I've seen and what I see with my own two eyes, and that's that Troy likes to attack the middle of the field offensively, and they put a lot of stress on your linebackers. The linebacker group is banged up. Tamarcio Reese is banged up. It's obvious. He's playing through it. You know, he's a team leader, and that's commendable, but it's obvious that something's lingering with Reese. So, yeah, they're going to attack the middle of the field offensively, and then they're going to stress your linebackers offensively. That doesn't bode well for Georgia Southern. And then they have a defense that will attack you from all angles and kind of doesn't allow a quarterback to make a decision post-snap. So that doesn't bode well for Georgia Southern, I don't think. I could see this game ended up being, Troy getting off to like a 13-0 lead or something like that, and then Georgia Southern battling back. If I had to predict, I would say, I'll say 24-21 Troy, if I had to make a prediction.
Yeah, yesterday I said 27-21 Troy. Southern's got a real good chance to win this game if they keep it with, just like any game
wouldn't
at Paulson.
Wouldn't surprise me at all.
If you can keep it within a touchdown in the fourth quarter, Southern's going to win that game.
Yeah.
Just like the App State game, they didn't end up needing it. My vibe the whole week on that App State game was if they could keep it within a touchdown into the fourth quarter, they think they can win. Yeah. I think it's the same thing here.
Yeah, and keep in mind that if Georgia Southern does win out and take care of business in the Sun Belt, that they will likely see a team that they've already played this year in ULM and or Arkansas State. So, lot to play for, and you could still beat every
team. That game would be at Paulson Stadium, by the way.
Yeah, what have you heard? December 1st, it would be at noon, and then we'd be talking about, is that the biggest game in Paulson Stadium history since they joined the FBS? And it seems like we've had that conversation every time they've played in Paulson Stadium this year. Greg, you got anything else for the folks before we sign off?
No, our high school football broadcasts for the year are done. So, I guess now it's just watch WSAV at 11 o'clock.
Yeah, and I'll be heading up to Statesboro tonight for Georgia Southern's men's basketball home opener. They'll be taking on Carver College, the hoops team for, you're laughing at Carver College? They got a good club this year.
What are they at? What are they? Are they NAIA? NJCAA?
I'll have to give you the full scouting report on Carver College after I find out who Carver College is. But the Georgia Southern team has plenty of hype this year on the basketball court.
Second in the preseason poll?
Yeah, and for good reason, returning Tukey Brown, amongst others. So keep an eye on SavannahNow.com/sports for coverage of that basketball game and for previews of Georgia Southern's football game this weekend against Troy. Until then, thank you guys for listening, and remember to rate, subscribe, and share this podcast. We'll see you next week.
Oh, he will. Adrian Peterson is taking care of things right now.
Down the sideline. If he can get loose, he's gone. Iligwe will score.
Wesley Fields, touchdown, Georgia Southern.